people jump to testing before they have the foundations in place. I have to work on all this stuff before I can even take a supplement. Yes, otherwise you're just going to end up doing gut protocol after gut protocol because your symptoms are going to return. I'm going to break down 4 specific areas that anyone can use to heal their gut for good without testing, supplements, protocols. The gut and our lymph are partners. Really simple ways that we can support our lymphatic system are going to be walking, especially after meals. Deep belly breathing is also very helpful. Supporting your digestion is one of the first ways you start to heal your gut. If you rush in, throw ingredients around and demand a meal instantly, it's going to be super chaotic. Your gut's not going to break down that food well. How do we live in a society that no longer values sitting down to eat a meal? The biggest issue I see for most people is that... Welcome to the Hormone Healing RD podcast, where you'll get clear, practical guidance for your healing journey. I'm Amanda Montalvo, women's health dietitian and mineral expert. I have helped thousands of women and navigated a lot of my own healing struggles. And after going through that process, I know how confusing and frustrating and overwhelming the wellness world can be. So with this podcast, I really aim to cut through the noise with simple, clinically backed insights on hormones, minerals, and what your body actually needs to heal. So that's what we're here for. I'm very excited about today's topic. It's about gut health and how to support your actually healing your gut without doing stool testing and protocols and things like that. And this came about after one of my Patreon members, when I said, what do you guys want to learn about the podcast coming back? What are you interested in this season? I got a request for how to support your gut and heal your gut without doing stool testing because they're like not financially able to at this time. And I'm like, what a great question, because there's so much you can do. And it's not even supplements, right? I'm like thinking just lifestyle stuff. Like there's a lot that you can do. So that's what I want to focus on today. I feel like whenever you look at this topic, if you do any research on it, it's a lot of women are told like take a probiotic or eliminate these foods, like a food elimination diet's going to heal your gut. Things like that, supporting digestion. And listen, those are not necessarily, it's not that they're bad things. Number one, I do feel like things like that, ideally you're testing, especially if you're like a sensitive individual, if you have like any histamine issues, because probiotics can go very badly for histamine people. But just in general, I'm like this, it just glosses right over the most important thing. The biggest issue I see for most people is that they are very stressed. They are living a very chronically, in a chronic fight or flight state, and they don't have the foundations in place. And when that happens, it's very difficult to actually improve your gut health. Because if you're stressed all the time, your digestion's not going to be good. You're going to have more inflammation in your gut. It's going to affect your gut lining. And we'll get into all this in more detail. But just like kind of like a big overview, stress is a huge key player that I think people don't put enough attention into. Meal hygiene, blood sugar, because when we have a lot of blood sugar imbalance, that creates more inflammation in our body. That's going to affect our immune system and our gut health. And then just so like other daily kind of habitual things like supporting your lymphatic system in your liver and things that are very simple. But when you actually have a good routine with them, when you get out of the chronic fight or flight state, that's when you can heal things long term. So even if you do, and I'm not against, I love stool testing. It was so helpful for me, especially on my fertility journey with my first daughter and acne. I mean, I long-term acne sufferer over here, and I definitely had a gut component. I used to take antibiotics for my acne when I was younger. So it really has made a huge difference for myself, and I don't want to negate testing. I think we do it in our practice. I think it's so helpful. But I think people jump to testing before they have the foundations in place. And they're like, oh, I have to work on all this stuff before I can even take a supplement. And it's like, ideally, yes. Otherwise, you're just going to end up doing gut protocol after gut protocol because your symptoms are going to return. Or maybe new symptoms pop up. Or you're like, man, I felt so much better. My gut issues were gone. And then 3 to 6 months later, you're like, wow, they're slowly starting to return. And that's when I immediately think, okay, there is a foundational issue going on here. I mean, the gut is so important. That's why we do stool testing and we think it's so huge to support that. It's important for hormone health. It's important for energy, our immune system function, but it's also very sensitive to daily and chronic stressors. And if we only focus on killing off certain pathogens, adding in supplements, we are really missing out on these simple everyday habits that will actually drive healing and also improve other areas of our life. So that's really what I want to focus on today. I'm going to break down four specific areas that anyone can use to heal their gut for good. So we're going to talk about stress and the gut-brain axis first. We're going to talk about circadian rhythm and digestion, the gut microbiome. We're going to talk about meal hygiene and blood sugar, and then supporting the lymphatic system and how that also connects to our gut and immune systems as well. So we don't have to do all these things at once either. I just want to say, as you listen to this, just pick one thing, pick one area. I always say, like, what one is the most exciting for you? Like, which one are you most interested in? Or which one you're like, oh, I could definitely do this. This feels manageable, and start there. Because a lot of the things I'm going to be talking about, we're going to start with stress. And listen, that's not easy. I'm still addressing stress. I'm like, does it ever end? I'm really hoping one day I will get the complete hang of it. But I mean, life changes and, you know, like your family grows and stuff like that. It's like stress will just shift into different areas. But stress is definitely one of the major areas of focus that we work on with clients, that I work on with myself. When I think of like my kids and supporting their gut health, they both had some gut issues previously when they were younger. My youngest is still, we're still like working on hers. But one of the biggest parts of that process, even with kids, is working on their stress. I think it's one of the most overlooked parts of like gut issues. And when our bodies are in this high stress state, it just really ruins the communication between the gut and the brain. And digestion suffers. And I have done previous podcast episodes, like one on how to have healthy digestion. And I talk about like digestion starts in your brain first and like trying to relax and stuff before your meals. I also get into a lot of like all the different types of digestive support. So if you want to nerd out on that, it's there for you. And digestion is huge. It's really like supporting your digestion is like, I think, one of the first ways you start to heal your gut. Because if you're not breaking down your food well, then you're going to have these large food particles, and that creates chaos in the gut, more inflammation, doesn't feed your good gut bacteria properly. And then you start to have just little imbalances, and they start off small, but if it persists over time, that's when issues can arise. So, and plus, like, you don't absorb your nutrients as well. And then if you don't have a good digestive juice release, typically that means you don't have good bile release, and that means that you're not getting rid of estrogen and toxins and excess copper and all the things that we're getting rid of in bile. So it's so critical. Digestion is huge, but we have to think about not just like, should I take a digestive enzyme or use bitters or apple cider vinegar or something, but what am I doing on a daily basis that is shutting down my digestion? And that's usually stress. So if we think about a really easy way to understand this, is that you can think of your digestive system like a busy highway. So when you're relaxed, cars are flowing through smoothly. Food is broken down, nutrients get absorbed, waste gets moved along and removed. But when that stress comes in and takes over, it's like a giant traffic jam. And signals between the brain and the gut get clogged, enzymes don't show up on time, and the whole system slows to a crawl. And then that's when bacteria can overgrow, when symptoms like bloating can pop up, constipation, diarrhea, skin issues, because not everyone with gut issues has digestive issues. Like I personally more had other symptoms, like more like histamine symptoms, rashes, redness, lots of like hormonal swings in my cycle and acne. And so not everyone's gut symptoms are going to look like bloating and things like that. They can, and like anxiety, you know, they can show up in other areas. So when our digestion is not working well, it just creates all this disruption in the gut. We're just stuck in this fight or flight response. And then everything else that's supposed to happen, digestive juices, stomach acid, enzymes, bile, gut motility, that gets thrown off. And so that's when we can start to see symptoms pop up. And it's not even just, so that's where it starts, this poor digestion. But eventually what happens is it can make our gut lining more permeable or leaky. And basically that high cortisol, that stress hormone, it starts signaling and activating mast cells. And this is a part of our immune response. And it's important. It's supposed to happen. But if it's happening too often, it can eventually weaken tight junctions that keep our gut lining intact and like strong. And over time, this can allow bacteria and toxins to slip into our bloodstream and slowly creates inflammation, immune reactions that make those gut symptoms worse. And again, they could be actual GI symptoms. They could be skin, histamine, mental health, physical symptoms, things like that. And this is definitely much more well known now. We used to mostly have animal studies, but now we have more human studies that chronic stress really does increase that gut permeability. And you can think about your gut lining as like a security gate. And it's really deciding what gets in and what stays out. And stress is having that chronic stress over time that can lead to leaving that gate unlocked. And things that shouldn't pass through, like bacteria and toxins, are, and then that's triggering all these alarms and inflammation in the body, and that makes everything worse. And it just creates this big inflammatory cascade that further drives those gut symptoms. So over time, that's how stress, it's digestion, it's also immune response. I mean, I think of how many I've seen, I would say thousands at this point, of stool tests. I've been doing this for over a decade, and it's the amount of tests that have low secretory IgA, which is an immune marker. I would say most of them have very low levels. Whenever I see someone that either has high or normal levels, I'm like, oh, good. It's not going to take as long to work on this process. And they probably haven't been as chronically stressed for as long. But when I see that very, very low secretory IgA marker, that's what tells me, I'm like, okay, you've probably been chronically stressed and it's been affecting your gut and immune system for a very long time. And again, it's not always going to show with gut symptoms, but it definitely can, and we just aren't aware of them. So that's really where the stress piece comes in as far as what I think helps people the most with dealing with it, because it's like managing your stress is so much more than just adding in things as a checklist. Like I think of like meditation or mindfulness practices and yoga. And like, listen, I think that these things are all great. I really do. But what I often see happen is that women will add these types of practices in, but they don't change anything else about how they live their life. So they just have a longer checklist now, which is probably going to add to their stress. Cause whenever I'm like, oh, you know, like breath work can really activate your vagus nerve, or even like singing and humming and things like that can help with that like vagal tone. It's like anything additional, they're kind of like at their max capacity, which I could not understand more. I feel like I'm just getting out of not being at my max capacity. So I fully understand that. And I think that's why I'm such a big advocate for like, what are you currently doing? What can we just either things that you're doing really well, do them more, or make sure we don't lose them, or look at like, could we just slow something else down or swap something else out, or just take a bunch of stuff out is what I love to have people do, is to just like clear things out if they can. But even just the way you're living, it's how you live and design your life that's going to dictate those stress levels for the most part. Obviously, you can have many outside stressors that are out of your control that you can't reduce your stress. And this is why it's so important to look at more how am I living versus what could I add, right? So I think a big one that many people can have control over is just being very overstimulated and having way too much like time on your phone, scrolling on social media, constant notifications, always being available to people and always being on. We were not designed to be constantly bombarded with information, comparison, like on social media, demands from people 24/7. We really weren't. And that stimulation keeps us in this fight or flight state. Also very much messes with our dopamine levels, and I think can just really impact motivation and things like that. So working on time away from your phone, I think this is like the number one thing that personally helps me, is just getting back in my world and not worrying about other people's worlds and what they're doing. Especially I think if you have a business online, it can be hard. You kind of feel like I have to stay in the know. Or if you work in a certain field or something, marketing or whatever, it can be very difficult. Or if you're just trying to learn things online, that's like the biggest thing that I hear. Obviously, I have this podcast that people are probably trying to learn something, which I think can be great, but it's so important to have boundaries around that and how much you are listening to things and using your phone. Like, I will not listen to more than one or two podcast episodes a week because it's not good for my brain. It's not good for my creativity. And it's not good for just like my focus and my attention span. And so those are like the kind of boundaries I have in place. I try to only use my phone after a certain time of day. Now my schedule has changed a ton because my husband is home. He just got out of the military. And so I'm like really only on my phone during my work block for that day, which has been life-giving. It can make it hard because I'm not as in contact with, you know, friends. I mean, I still talk to my friends and family plenty, but it's not like constant, which I'm like, this is okay. And this is healthy. So looking at where's your overstimulation coming from, if that's a concern for you. I also know so many people now that already have this in a good place because they've realized how much it affects their health. But that is a really big one. I also think having realistic expectations for your day is very, very important. I often hear from women that are like, no matter what I do, I still feel stressed. And it's often not because they aren't trying to work on things. It's usually because their days are structured around unrealistic expectations. They can't actually get everything done in that day. So imagine like never getting your to-do list done. Like, that's very stressful for most people. And so really working on your expectations of like, can you actually do all that stuff in a day? Or is it maybe not realistic? Or just, you know, I just think about like women based on where you are in your cycle. Sometimes you can get a lot more done and that's great. And then sometimes you can't. Like in your luteal phase, could you simplify things and make your life less stressful? Or certain days, things like that. But I think healing really requires you to ask like, what do I really want for my health and my life? And what can I let go of? What is not bringing me that? And even if you can't let go of it immediately, like I just think of, I mean, we had so much stress when my husband was in the military. He was in for 9 years and we had kids for over 3 of those years. And it was just so much. He deployed a lot. There was so much that was out of my control. And I constantly felt like, well, this doesn't matter. I can't do anything about it now. He's not here, you know, his contract isn't up until this date. So there was a lot that I felt like was out of my control. But when I shifted my mindset to like, but what can I do right now? What do I not have to wait for? That really, really, really helped me. And that's something that I think can be helpful to be like, what is, you know, maybe you're waiting. You feel like, oh, when my kids are older or when you're not working a certain job or when there's some sort of life shift, you could be waiting for that. But it's like, is there anything you can implement now? There's usually at least one small thing. So I think that can be really helpful. And then shifting your priorities. It's not about doing nothing. It's about choosing what matters most and trying to protect your energy. So looking at how are you living? Could you spend less time on your phone and more time outside? That's a huge one. Can you build tiny little moments of joy into your day with hobbies that you like or connecting with loved ones or pets? Just things that matter to you and really trying to work in those little doses of downtime without guilt. Because it's always like people are moving from one thing to the next. And this is just going to keep you in that chronic fight or flight state. And when you build in these tiny little moments, like I think meals are that for us for sure. Not only because it's really good for your digestion and your gut health, but also because they're built in breaks in our day where we're going to sit down and eat together. And this was before, this was always whether my husband was working or not. So just allowing that downtime without guilt, that has always been challenging for me. I very much like to work and keep busy and I'm constantly doing things. And having kids really, I will always say this, having kids improved my health so much because I'm not constantly going because I want to have memories and moments and I want to be there with them and meaningfully connect with them and be available. And it's like, you can't be always doing stuff when you have that happen. And is there a really big balance between like, okay, but I have to like, we have to do laundry, we have to clean our house, we have to cook food. And then as you know, obviously as your kids get older, there's a lot more responsibility, whether that's like homeschool or bringing them to school, activities, things with friends. Obviously, like I even think it's like we have like a family dinner night on Sundays. Like looking at your schedule and being like, is this pushing us toward the life that we want to live and what we say our values are? Or is this just adding more stress to our plate? That's kind of how I'm always thinking and trying to be so intentional with that, like as our kids get older as well. So I just think like trying to create realistic rhythms and routines versus trying to cram so much into every single day just for getting things done and being productive. It's like you kind of have to choose. Like, do you want to have like realistic, healthy, relaxing, peaceful rhythms? And sometimes it's not always relaxing. I mean, there's plenty of times where I would definitely say our lives are very full, you know? So, but it's also like trying to have that balance of like, okay, we have a lot going on and then we're going to have a rest period. You know, it's good for everyone involved. Some things that I would say like have worked really well for me are thinking about like, how do I want to feel and how do I want my kids to feel throughout the day? And then working rhythms around that. Like, what would that look like? Again, choosing activities. What's the most important? Is this worth having a rush around for? Like, we recently started gymnastics again for Eliana because she asked for it after we moved. And I was like, okay, but you know, this means that we're going to have to, it's going to take a little bit more time. We have to get them out of the house and get somewhere, do the class, you know, come home. So it does like make our day a little bit less flexible. And that's good because it's good for her to learn that kind of stuff. But it's also, it's just like another thing that we have to do. So it's like, is this worth it for us, for her? Yes, because she absolutely loves it. But whenever we add something in like that or like planning out our week, like we're so intentional with like, do we want to be extra busy this day? Is this going to be worth it? And sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. I also think it's important to like check in with those rhythms and routines that you're building and working on and seeing, is this working out the way that we thought or should we shift it? And I do think it's important to have this much thought into like how you're living your life and what you're saying yes to and no to. And it's always going to be changing, but I think it's important to the list. Like, do you have a weird gut feeling? Like, I kind of thought I had an idea of what our schedule was going to look like when my husband got out. And now I'm like, I don't think it's going to work the way that I thought. Cause it's my youngest is like not doing well with being away from me for long chunks. So it's like, and I don't want that, right? It's very stressful for everyone involved. And I'm like, okay, how can we shift things a little bit? So it's just like good to like check in. If you have a weird gut feeling, if you feel like things are starting to get crazy again and packed, don't ignore that. I would say like lean in and try to adjust things again. And then just knowing like it can be really, really, really hard to get out of fight or flight and get used to not being constantly stressed and in motion and doing things and checking your phone or checking your email or responding to a text or a call or checking social media, whatever it might be, or like driving to the next thing. It can be a lot. And you can get thoughts of like guilt, shame, like you're not doing enough, like you don't deserve the rest. You have to work for it, right? But you have to keep telling yourself and moving forward with what you want of like, okay, I deserve to live a peaceful life. I deserve to have good health. I deserve to not feel stressed all the time. And you don't have to kill yourself to earn some rest. I just think that's kind of like what our society is built around. And it makes it impossible, whether you have gut issues, hormone concerns, thyroid concerns, adrenal concern, like actual stress concerns, whatever it is, fertility. I mean, truly, truly, this is the foundation, how you're living constantly and the choices you make all day long. That is what sets the tone for your health and whether or not you can heal your gut without doing further testing and protocols and stuff like that. Or at least get yourself set up so that if you did do that, it would work and not leave you on this like protocol hamster wheel. So that's kind of my spiel on stress. You may have heard a lot of it before, but if that's an area that you have not addressed, I would honestly not even listen to the rest of the podcast and just start there. How am I living my life? What am I doing in a day? Am I rushing? Am I always on my phone? I remember I did a little audit for myself a while back, and I'll have clients do this too. If they kind of like feel like if I have someone that's very disconnected and they're like, I don't know, I don't feel like stressed all the time, but everything else is telling me that they're constantly in fight or flight, then that's when I'll just be like, okay, well, just take a little piece of paper, have it with you all day, and like write down whenever you pick up your phone, or just kind of go through like your day of like what you're doing, thoughts that came up and things like that. And just when they get distracted and they're like, oh, I'm just always going. I'm literally never stopping. So it can take time and it can be very unsettling as you shift out of that fight or flight. I'm definitely in that season now of being like, oh, I don't have to do everything by myself. I'm not like, it's not all on me and I'm not staying up late working and, you know, working all day on the weekends because that's when my husband's home. You know, it's just, it's been very interesting to see that in myself as well. Cause I was like, wow, I really thought I was like really good at kind of like regulating everything. But I just think when you have so much to do, it just gets impossible. And this is where the being realistic comes in and getting help when you need it as you can. Obviously, you know, I've been there. There's times where you just can't, but it's like you can't live like that forever. And sometimes you're going to have hard seasons like that, but it's like, what are you going to do to support yourself while you're in it? And then really, how are you eventually going to get out of it? What's the plan to kind of transfer out? And again, this matters for our gut health because when your nervous system is constantly in fight or flight, your body's not going to switch to rest and digest, not going to digest your food well. It's going to affect your digestive juice production, your gut motility, whether you have constipation or diarrhea, it can go either way. Nervous system can go either way and affect that. And then your gut lining, that gut permeability, it's not going to be able to repair itself. So when we manage stress, support the nervous system, we're going to restore our gut's natural functions, which is a huge part of healing your gut for good without testing, supplements, protocols, anything like that. So that's the stress piece. Let's get into circadian rhythm. I know I talk about this a lot. I will link to my episode with Carrie Bennett. As always, if you want to like really nerd out on circadian rhythm, but overall, just like a quick breakdown of what it is, how it works in the body. Our bodies all run on a clock. Just like your brain, your gut also runs on that clock. The gut bacteria, digestive juices, even our immune defenses are going to rise and fall in daily patterns based on light. So when that rhythm is thrown off, then whether that's like irregular sleep or weird meal times, like eating late at night or skipping meals, things like that, too much light exposure, like artificial light exposure at night, or not getting enough natural light during the day, digestion can really, really struggle. So a way we can think about it is you can think of your gut like an orchestra. When each instrument, the hormones, microbes, digestive juices, when they are all playing on time, you get harmony. When rhythms are disrupted, like say we are not getting the good light exposure, constantly in fight or flight, that's another part of supporting our circadian rhythm. It's like musicians that are playing out of sync. Everything sounds off. That is really what's happening in your gut. So you will have digestive juices not being produced at the right time, because that's very driven by circadian rhythm. You can have certain bacteria, like our gut microbiome, the bacteria in our gut shifts day versus night. So like daytime is more for like helping support digestion and things like that, whereas nighttime is more like detox support. So all of those things will shift and change with our circadian rhythm. And when that is off, all the different gut functions are off as well. So yeah, I even think about like certain beneficial bacteria will have like peak activity producing compounds like short chain fatty acids and that repair gut lining mostly at nighttime. So when we are really throwing things off and we're wondering why do I need to focus on circadian rhythm? Is this actually important for me? Everyone, light exposure is not optional. Circadian rhythm is not optional. Again, it's like stress, it's foundational. And if we think about all the hormones and things that follow, like cortisol follows that circadian rhythm, it peaks in the morning, and then that's going to help prime digestion and immune defense. And then melatonin is going to increase at nighttime. This is going to signal repair. Melatonin is a very powerful antioxidant. Obviously, it's important for sleep, but it's really important for gut health, hormones, fertility, everything. So it's going to signal repair. It's going to help with gut barrier restoration, repairing that gut lining that can get disrupted. If those rhythms are off, those digestive juices are not timed well. It just leaves that food harder to break down. And like I mentioned in the beginning, I really look at supporting digestion, not just through digestive supplements and things like that, but through stress and circadian rhythm support. That is really our first step to supporting good gut health forever. Our monthly cycle is like a report card. Understanding how to track your cycle and know what is and is not normal as far as your symptoms can go can help you identify possible hormone imbalances and whether or not maybe you're making nutrition, lifestyle, or supplement changes. It'll just give you an idea if those are working for you or not. And this is why I created my free Healthy Period Starter Guide. It walks you through all the different phases of your cycle, how to track, teaches you what's at the root of different hormone imbalances, and even has a section for nutrition tips for healthy hormones. I think every woman should have this knowledge easily accessible to them, which is why I made it. You can grab the guide via the link in the show notes, or you can go to my website, hormonehealingrd.com, and you can find it under the guides and support section. And then immune function too. Our gut microbes, the little bacteria in our gut, they can help train the immune system on a daily cycle. And so if we have disruption in that cycle, then we can have weaker gut defenses, more inflammation. So it's not just like digestive juices. Yes, that's a big part of it, but even just what bacteria is more active when, what hormones are more active when, those are going to impact, is our gut doing the right functions at the right time? Is that orchestra in harmony or is it completely out of sync? Some simple ways we can support this, because I know I've talked about this to death, but I can't not bring it up, right? It's been so, so huge for myself, for the clients that we work with, course students. I mean, I'll have people that go through the course and they're like, yeah, I only implemented the circadian rhythm stuff and half my symptoms are gone. I'm like, okay, all right, but still do your hair test. But that is absolutely amazing. And it's encouraging. And it's like, okay, this is how you get results that last. It's not by taking a bunch of supplements and jumping from protocol to protocol. It is about working on these simple daily habits that are hard. I personally think that they are hard. I think stress is hard, like working on your daily rhythm, because people just, there are people have expectations of you and you have your own expectations of yourself. And a lot of it is just based off a society that it's very unhealthy and it's not realistic. So I want to say that, like, I know it's hard to work on these things, but these are, it can look different for everyone. There's no perfect way to do it. And there are things that you will take with you forever. And if you have kids, I'm like how, imagine like my kids every morning, they're like, get some, my youngest is like 1.5. She's like, get some light. I'm like, yep, we're going to go right outside. You know, they like, she's going to know to do that forever. And I'm like, man, imagine if that's just how it was. Hopefully eventually it will be, but really simple ways to support your circadian rhythm are going to be getting that light first thing in the morning. I know that people talk about like being outside for sunrise for 30 minutes or whatever, or getting UVA rise. And I think that it's so great if you can do that. I also think that is not realistic for a lot of people. And so just getting outside for a few minutes when you first wake, if it's light out when you wake up, just get your eyes in the light. If it's cloudy and rainy outside, still go get your eyes out there. Your body's still going to take in the light and know what time it is. And even if it's not sunrise, again, your body's still going to know what time it is based on the different UV rays that are out, the different spectrum wavelengths of light. It'll know. That's the coolest part. I'm like, you can't mess up circadian rhythm. You just got to be outside. So getting that first thing in the morning is going to help reset cortisol and melatonin. Tells your body, hey, we're going to stop making melatonin. We're going to start making cortisol. And it's going to start to wake up those digestive juices. So that's huge. And then blocking artificial blue light at nighttime, of course, trying to have a good wind down routine. Get dimming the lights, turning them off. Maybe you have little red light lamps or salt lamps, whatever works for you. Obviously, I love the glasses. I wear these, my yellow ones, when I'm working on my computer to minimize that artificial blue light. I wear red ones at nighttime. You could just do orange. I like the red because it blocks everything out and I sleep so good. So my red ones are from Bon Charge. I got those like in 2018, I think. It was my first pair. And yeah, so those have lasted, and all mine are prescription. I don't wear contacts. I just wear glasses. So mine are prescription. And these are Ra Optics. They have really nice yellow ones, but you can also get them on Amazon. And let me put a reminder to put the links in the notes for you guys. I have like a whole list, put circadian rhythm links. I have a whole list. I have like the nice fancy brands and I have discount codes. And then I have like Amazon brands that you guys can get, because sometimes you just need to like dip your toe in at first before you invest. But I will say, like, if you, for me, because I have prescription, I needed a prescription pair. And so those worked really well, but they last forever, obviously, if you don't have your kids and stuff like break them. But that's ideal. You don't have to do the glasses though. I have plenty of clients that just make their phone screen red. They turn all the lights off and they don't do much screen time otherwise. So they don't need the glasses. I think it just depends on the person. And I get so many questions about contacts. So I will address that here because I'm sure people are going to ask this question because typically you want to get outside. I take my glasses off in the morning time. When I'm working out outside, I take them off. When we go for walks, I kind of put them on and off depending on where we're walking. Beach, I don't typically wear them. Obviously, it depends on how bad your vision is. My vision's pretty bad, but I love taking breaks from my glasses. I've actually noticed I've done this for a really long time where when I take breaks from them, I feel like it helps make my vision better and it kind of gives my eyes a break. I haven't gotten a new prescription. I think it was 2016 or 2015. It's been almost 10 years. And then I went to the eye doctor and they're like, yep, that hasn't changed. I'm like, and they're always like super shocked by that. But I will say implementing the blue light blockers on my computer time has made a big difference for me and just taking breaks and stuff from constantly having my glasses on. And obviously like don't do that if you're driving or not, don't feel safe or stuff like that. But that is just something that has worked really well for me. And the contacts, I hate contacts, so I don't wear them, but you can get a brand called Dailies brand. And you could also just look up the brand you have and then see if they block UV light. Most of them do. And so that's why ideally you either wear contacts that do not block the UV light, like the Dailies brand, or you like, I personally, I've had a lot of clients that they're like, those are too expensive. So they don't get them. And I had one that actually did not like them. And then I know people that love them. So just like anything else, you have to figure out what works for you. If it is a lot more expensive than your current contacts, though, honestly, I don't think you need, unless you're living outside in your contacts, I just don't think most people need them. I think that you could just not put your contacts in until after you get morning light and then make sure that you take them out so you get natural light towards the end of the day and then wear blue blockers still at nighttime. So like that's a lot of our clients, like that's the kind of routine they'll do is they'll just take them out before their end of their day, wear their glasses so they can take their glasses off outside and get more natural light in their eyes. So it just, you know, you got to find the rhythm that works for you, but that can be very helpful. The other thing I want to mention that is important for circadian rhythm support too is meal timing and when you're eating your food. So this keeps, again, it helps with that digestive orchestra, all those juices and having those release at certain times. If you can keep consistent meal times for the most part, it doesn't have to be the exact same time. But if you can eat around the same time most days, primarily while it's light out, that is another great way to tell your body, this is what time it is. So trying to eat pretty soon after waking is ideal. Within an hour, I would say, ideally, again, it tells your body what time it is. And then, you know, eating that breakfast, lunch, dinner consistently. I try to avoid eating too much after dark. I have noticed that was a huge one for me where I used to always need a bedtime snack. It helped me sleep better. And I have plenty of clients that still do bedtime snacks. I don't think they're bad. But I talked about this in like my kind of like postpartum weight loss journey and like second pregnancy, because I entered that pregnancy at a much higher weight than my first pregnancy. And I was like, okay, do I really need a bedtime snack? Because I was deep in a circadian rhythm support. I had gotten rid of all my histamine symptoms that popped up in my first pregnancy just with circadian support. And then I did some deeper gut work. And then of course I conceived right after that because my immune system and everything was in a good place. And that like really, I stopped doing the nighttime snack during that postpartum season and even during pregnancy. And I think there's like a pressure to like have a bedtime snack during pregnancy and like early postpartum. And I just found for me, I'm like, I just feel so much better when I eat a lot of food during the day and don't have it at night. And I think there was some leptin resistance and stuff going on. So it worked, that works really well for me. And it's another way that I can very strongly support my circadian rhythm. So just eating consistently. And I don't think, depending on like how you feel in the morning and what your schedule is like, I prefer to like have half of a bar first thing when I wake up, get my strength training in, and then make breakfast with my girls and have like a real breakfast. It doesn't happen every day. This morning it didn't happen. They both wanted to eat right away. So sometimes I'll eat right away. Sometimes I won't. But, and I have plenty of clients that are like, that's my time in the morning to do stuff for myself, like working out and stuff like that. You can still do that. Just eat a little something before you work out. That's very, do not work out fasted. That's very important. And then it also, again, tells your body that like, this is what time it is. So meal timing is another big one that I feel like is not talked about as much when it comes to circadian rhythm. Eating at nighttime is very confusing. One, because our digestive juices are not as strong at that time typically. And it's also shifts your blood sugar, which can affect different hormone signaling at nighttime when we go to bed. So again, if having a bedtime snack helps you sleep, I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't think it's a huge deal. But if you have a ton of gut issues, maybe you have struggled with weight loss resistance, and you're really trying to work on the circadian rhythm piece, it could be a good one to experiment with. So basically, if we can align those daily habits with our body's natural clock, that circadian rhythm that it's working off of, which runs off the light outside of us, that is huge for supporting digestion, the repair of the gut, a good gut microbiome, and a good immune system, and hormone signaling, of course, as well. So that's the circadian rhythm piece. And now I want to talk about meal hygiene and blood sugar balance. So when we think about meal hygiene, for example, I was trying to think of an analogy for this one. And this one's, I think, is very funny. It's like a kitchen analogy. So if you think of your gut like a kitchen, I'm thinking like a restaurant kind of kitchen. And if you rush in, throw ingredients around and demand a meal instantly, it's going to be super chaotic, not prepared well. It's probably going to look and taste not so great. But when you slow down and give the chefs time to make their meal, follow the right order, everything comes together perfectly. And really the same thing is true for digestion. If you rush in, you're on the go, your gut's not going to break down that food well. Your absorption is going to suffer and your overall gut health is eventually going to decline if this is your norm for most of your meals. And that's when all those, the gut symptoms can come up like bloating, reflux, constipation, diarrhea, things like that. But then also it could also be reflected in like hormone symptoms, estrogen dominance, irregular cycles. Our gut has a huge impact on ovulation stuff as well, and progesterone balance, skin issues, eczema, acne, psoriasis, anything like that, any histamine symptoms, anxiety, mental health concerns. It has a huge impact on all of that. So if we're thinking about, okay, digestion is going to start before the food even touches our stomach, how can we support that? Chewing really slowly. That's going to help signal our brain that we need to release digestive juices, stomach acid, bile, digestive enzymes. Eating in that calm state versus like rushing around is going to allow your body to get in that rest and digest state. And that's really the only time digestion is going to work properly. So those simple shifts of like sitting down for a meal, chewing thoroughly, taking a breath before eating, not rushing, not being on your phone, not having distractions is so, so important. And again, I think this is another hard one for people because they're like, well, I don't have time to eat. I'm like, oh my gosh, food and like and everything, it's so important that I'm like, how do we live in a society that no longer values this, no longer values sitting down to eat a meal and prioritizing that? I mean, I remember when I worked in healthcare before I was on my own with my business, hospital settings, long-term care settings, corporate wellness settings. I mean, people just like, they just skip lunch or they just eat at their desk and they expect you to do the same. And I'm like, I'm the dietitian, guys. I'm telling you, if I'm like walking around telling people to like relax and chew their food more, how you expect me not to do the same? Like it was a very interesting dynamic where I'm like, oh, you don't want me. You want me to go do more work. You don't want me to sit here and eat my lunch. Like it was just very interesting dynamic in that like corporate setting. And I see that a lot with my clients. I mean, plenty of people, they're like, no, I always go out, eat my lunch outside, or like I go somewhere else, eat my lunch and no one bothers me. It's like part of my routine, or it's very, some offices like really promote it, which I'm like, that's awesome. And I think so smart, because then people are going to be, they get a little break, they're going to be rested and their head's going to be clear. And now they can refocus and get work done. So I just think it's one of those things that's not valued anymore. And even in ourselves, where it's like, I know so many moms that eat standing up at the counter. I'm like, your kids watch everything you do, every single thing. And most of the time, it's the moms that are eating standing up or not eating at all with their kids at their meals that they're like, my kids won't eat. They won't sit and eat. I'm like, you are not sitting and eating. I mean, they're learning from you. You are their number one role model. And I will die on that hill. But I have so many things to do. I'm like, it's something has to change. We have to value sitting down and chewing our food. And if you are connecting with loved ones or people that you work with or whatever, that is a great time. Laughing and talking and like chatting with people, that's a great way to relax your nervous system, you know? And so I just think it's an opportunity to build in that rest. We don't need to meditate for an extra 10 to 30 minutes a day. I think if you are relaxing and enjoying 3 meals a day, and sometimes maybe you have like a crazy, maybe there's like a crazy, like I think of like a lot of the moms I work with, and like that morning drop off in the morning, getting their kids ready to get out of the house for school is like crazy, right? Or even if they homeschool, it just seems like the mornings can be extra chaotic, just getting everyone kind of set up for the day, breakfast, things like that. And I'm like, okay, what can you shift here? And then maybe they have like a small snack before everyone gets up and they sit down and eat their meal after. I still am like, I think that there's probably a way, but everyone's got to find what works for them. And really trying to work on sitting down and valuing that time, looking instead of adding another thing in, you have to sit down and eat anyway. So how could you make it a little bit more supportive? And so meal hygiene, I think, is so something that some people are great, but put your phone away, don't have any distractions, and just eat your food. Maybe you're around other people and maybe go outside if you can. I think eating outside is another great way to get good light exposure. Check in with your circadian rhythm. If you have kids, it's a lot less mess to clean up. We eat a lot of our meals outside and it can just help calm. It's a good like reset. So using your meals as a little reset versus like having them be extremely stressful. And everyone's gonna have their own circumstances. But if you do find them stressful, that is something that I would really try to work on. And then blood sugar balance. So blood sugar balance is something that I feel like is not usually tied into like gut health, but when we have really erratic blood sugar, like highs and lows in our blood sugar, you are so much more likely to have highs and lows in stress hormones, which again, we've already talked about, that affects our gut health and digestion. So if we can have more stable blood sugar, that's going to lead to more stable digestion. And that is one that I've seen a lot of people as they work on not grazing and having snacky meals, but eating like, okay, I'm eating like 3 dense meals a day and it's really balanced my blood sugar. It's also been really great for my digestion as well. So that's a really big one. I also think that it's helpful for reducing inflammation in the body, because if we have inflammation from blood sugar, the gut is going to be, in our immune system, they're going to be impacted by that as well. So it's working on protein, fat, and carbs, fiber at every meal, trying to get that balance and eating dense meals to help stabilize your blood sugar versus like kind of grazing all day and having very like snacky meals. One, your digestion just doesn't turn on the same way. Two, circadian rhythm support, right? Eating those, timing those meals consistently is very helpful for that. And then three, if you're having smaller meals, you're going to have less, especially if they're not as dense. Like typically snacky meals, I think of like, it's probably a little more processed. There's probably less protein. Typically, there's less fiber. And so all those things will lead to, you know, less stable blood sugar, more swings, more cortisol swings. And then if we're constantly eating, this can also affect our migrating motor complex, the MMC. This is like our gut's cleanup crew. And so this comes in, it does like sweeps the small intestine between meals, clears any leftover food and bacteria. And this is happening every 3 to 4 hours between meals. So if you're eating every 2 hours, then that can be very tricky because you're not giving your gut enough time to clean up between that. And I tend to see when people are more like grazers, I tend to see less digestive juices being released and more things like gut overgrowth, SIBO, bloating, symptoms like that. So even just that's kind of like another case for like not constantly snacking and stuff throughout the day. So the major takeaways here that we want to slow down, work on balancing our meals, giving our gut space between eating, and really prioritizing those meals as time to eat your food and chew and relax and get a little reset for your day. Okay, last area is going to be supporting our lymphatic system. So the gut and our lymph are partners. Our lymph will clear immune byproducts, toxins, inflammation from the body. When we live a very stressful and sedentary lifestyle, that leads to sluggish lymph. And this contributes to bloating, puffiness, sluggish digestion. And so if we think about how can we support our lymphatic system, because it doesn't have a pump. And I have an episode that I'll link to, the lymphatic system that I did with Leah. And I'll also put my digestive one in there. So I put those notes because I will definitely forget, guys. But I will make sure I put those in there. But I did a whole lymphatic episode. I'm actually going to do another one. I have one in the works right now that I'm planning out for this season. So that will come soon as well. It's going to be about creating a daily lymphatic routine for yourself. That's like simple. Anyone can do it. Hopefully with Leah. We'll see. I'm still chatting with her, but that is coming. But either way, we support the lymphatic system. Doesn't have a pump. Most people, they are in like a high stress state, which can affect our lymphatic system and our circulation. And then if you are more sedentary, that just can lead to a lot more issues. So really simple ways that we can support our lymphatic system are going to be walking, especially after meals. This is another one. It's good for digestion. It helps bring cortisol levels down, and it's really good for blood sugar. So if you're someone that's struggling with insulin resistance, even a 5-10 minute walk after a meal is very helpful. This is one we like to have our clients do. Say they're like sedentary for a lot of their workday, then we try to have them work into their lunch break after lunch, super short walk, even just 5 minutes before they then have to go back to work and be sitting again. Deep belly breathing is also very helpful because our diaphragm will pump that lymphatic fluid and support the lymphatic system. Hydration, we need minerals and plenty of liquids to support our lymphatic system. So I feel like I've talked about this at length, but getting sea salt into your routine. I like to do a little sea salt first thing in the morning, and then doing a little salt in your water throughout the day, adrenal cocktails. I love the Paleo Valley electrolytes, and I always talk about those. There's a million electrolytes out there now, but those are my favorite. And they also have magnesium in them as well. So hydration, you getting minerals into that hydration throughout the day is very supportive. Gentle bouncing. This could be on a rebounder. You don't need a rebounder though. Honestly, most of my lymphatic routine doesn't use any tools. It just uses my body. So like very gentle bouncing, especially like keeping your arms loose when you're doing that, skipping in place, but even like your feet don't even have to leave the ground. Just that gentle little pump is really what helps get the lymphatic fluid flowing. Dry brushing or things like abdominal massage can also be very helpful. And then taking movement breaks and posture, little posture resets throughout the day. If you're constantly slumped over, that's also not good for lymphatic flow. And even like standing is obviously going to be better than sitting for the most part. But if you're still in that same position and not moving, that can still, you know, you can still have sluggish lymph from that. And that's where like the little movement breaks come in, whether that's like quick walk to fill up your water bottle, quick walk to go outside, get a couple seconds of light in your eyes, a little sun on your skin, whatever it might be, but some sort of movement break or just noticing, hey, I've been in this position for an hour. I'm going to switch to another position now. That can also very gently support your lymphatic system. And then a little day in the life, like if we're going to think of how could I work in some lymph support throughout my day, in the morning when you're stepping outside for that morning light to support your circadian rhythm, you could do like a little bit of gentle bouncing, arm swings, skipping in place, things like that. Just very gently wake up your lymphatic system and get those fluids moving right away. This alone, I'm telling you, it's like we've had clients incorporate this, and especially like habit stacking like that is helpful. And they're like, wow, I notice a huge difference in like the puffiness in my face, just inflammation levels in my body, things like that. They're huge. So very gentle lymphatic movement outside can be helpful. The Big Six, a lot of our clients like the Big Six. I will link that as well, the resource for how to do that. And then, so say that's like morning time, then midday, say like after your lunch, you take a quick 10-15 minute walk after eating that meal. That's going to support your digestive system and your blood sugar, but it's also going to get that lymph moving steadily. Drinking mineral rich water throughout the day, a pinch of sea salt or working on an adrenal cocktail. And then taking, maybe you take a little break in the afternoon if you've been sitting at a desk to stand up, take a quick walk around your room, just move around, or even just sit and do a little deep belly breathing and working on your diaphragm, pumping the lymph in that way. And then maybe nighttime looks like swapping scrolling at night for a few minutes of dry brushing or self-abdominal massage before bed. That can be super relaxing and is another way to tell your nervous system that, hey, it's time to go to bed. And it's going to help process those immune byproducts from throughout the day. So supporting your lymph doesn't have to be like getting a vibration plate, getting tools, you know, doing special things or spending an hour doing a lymphatic routine. It could just be these tiny little things that you work in throughout your day that are also just going to so happen to support breaks, rest, digestion, all the things that we've already talked about. So hopefully as you're listening to this, you're like, oh, this is just like everything kind of feeds into each other. And that's really what the overall message is about from this episode for you guys. It's healing your gut is not about chasing the next probiotic or gut protocol or eliminating more foods. It is about showing up consistently with the foundations for yourself. Stress, circadian rhythm, meal hygiene, your blood sugar, your lymphatic system. These are not necessarily like sexy things. And sometimes it's harder to, it's just easier to take a supplement sometimes than being like, let me change my whole daily rhythm, you know? So I get that, but they are worth putting time and effort into. And these are the things you're going to take with you forever. And if you do decide, hey, I want to do further testing. Like our bonus episode for this is on, I'm going to talk about minerals and gut health and digestion and things like that. And I'm going to show a little case study. It's going to be, I think, fun to kind of dig into like how do minerals affect your digestion? That's also very important. But ultimately, if you want to do further testing, whether that's minerals or gut, we want to be working on these foundations first or while we're doing those things so that you can see lasting results. So my encouragement for you this week is to not try to do everything at once. Don't look at this and be like, oh my gosh, there's 80 things I need to do now. Pick one area to focus on. Maybe it's just your meal hygiene. You know, I'm just going to focus on that. Or maybe it's just getting outside for light in the morning or just going for a walk after lunch or dinner. Whatever it might be, just focusing on one habit and weaving that into your routine. Because really our gut it's about rhythms and it's about reducing stress and supporting all the processes that are already happening in your body. We just want them to go at the right time. So when you do that, that's when your digestion, your immune function, your gut microbiome, all those things really thrive. And you can avoid things like a lot of the unwanted symptoms that we're dealing with today. So thank you for tuning in to the Hormone Healing RD podcast. If you found this episode helpful, the best way to support this show would be by leaving a review. It's going to help more women discover this message and hopefully feel empowered on their healing journey. And if you want to go deeper, make sure you get on my newsletter, Feminine Periodical. It goes out every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern time. And I just share like a lot of updates, things that are coming up, behind the scenes stuff, and then some topic I'm digging into and just getting very nerdy about, whether it's like hormones, minerals, gut health, things like that. You can find the link for that in the show notes, but I'm so glad you're here and I can't wait to connect with you next week.